Hi, welcome back to Out of Focus. I'm Shannon Stewart, and today I have my husband back on the podcast.
It's so good to be back with you.
Are you feeling energized because of the cold plunge?
Energized may not be the word I would use to describe my cold plunge. Long showers afterward. Hot showers might be better.
We've done it twice, and it is brutal getting in at
first.
It
is very brutal, yeah.
But it's quite refreshing when you get out.
Again, that may not be the word that I would use, but hey.
Hey, I heard about all the health benefits, so I'm going to try it out for a minute.
I'm getting rid of white fat. Or is it brown fat? I can't remember.
I don't remember what Tim said. He does say it helps with inflammation, which I believe. So we'll see. So take me back. What were you like as a little boy?
Angel.
I knew you were going to say that. Well-behaved, right?
You talked to my mom one day. What did she say about me?
You joked around with her and said, "Hey, Mom, I'm your favorite child, right?" And she looked at me like, "I don't know about that."
Well.
She loved you guys the same.
I was pretty good. I guess I was like I'm one of four, two older sisters, a younger brother. I've taken a test one time. It's called Discovering Your Strengths. It's actually a business book, but it will tell you what you're good at naturally, just by the way the answers come out. My number one strength, and I think it's followed me all the way through life, is winning others over. And so even as a child, I had a way of, if I would get in trouble, even when I was in high school, I would bring my mom home flowers and things like that. And so I tried to keep the peace there. But the way we were raised growing up, I grew up in a very strict home, Christian home. And it was so strict that you were afraid to be disobedient. A lot of it had to do with the church I grew up in. Very, very, very legalistic church. I remember when I was in high school, I think she was a year older than me, but a girl that was from my church, we went to the same high school, and she got pregnant her senior year of high school. And I'll never forget one Sunday her having to stand up and face the congregation with her parents. And I can still see the look of just embarrassment and shame on their faces. And if you were a kid in that church, you're like, I will never, ever put myself in that situation. And so a lot of my growing up, it was just fear-based. It wasn't so much, I accepted Christ when I was five, but a lot of our behavior was based on fear, not out of love for God.
So if you were to get in trouble when you were young, what would it be for? Mine was back talking. I always had to have the last word. I didn't care what it had to do with. I wanted the last word. So I had to learn to have a muzzle on my mouth at times because I would just say whatever came to my head, regardless of if it was hurtful or not.
I actually was a pretty good kid.
Can you tell me that you skipped school?
Well, when I was younger, I was a good kid.
So doesn't that...
I had a good work ethic. My dad taught me early on. I bet I was 8 or 9 years old when my dad had me cutting the lawn. And by about 10, I had a lawnmower and a can of gas, and I would push it around the neighborhood and get paid to cut people's lawns. And I started to work when I was 14, worked all the way through high school and college. And so for a lot of those ways, didn't date a whole lot. I wasn't much of a challenge, but I will tell you this, in high school.
What kind of high school did you go to?
Well, it was a public high school.
Can you tell about the locker story at some point?
Oh, that was middle school. I got stuffed in a locker.
Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead, rewind. How did you get stuffed in a locker?
One day I was Coach Dennis. He was our middle school PE coach, and we were out on the field doing something, and he asked me to go get something out of his office. And I remember as I was going down the hallway to his office, I looked through the gym doors where the locker room was, and I was in the seventh grade. Our middle school was seventh, eighth, and ninth. And I saw two ninth grade boys. I knew them, and they were going through people's clothes and just getting changed and stuff. And there had been a problem with that. So when I went back out, I told Coach Dennis I had seen these boys. And of course, they got called in. They got in trouble. And well, they saw me when I walked by, so they just knew it was me. And so the next day, and we had lockers that were like a full locker. The next day I was at my locker and the two guys came up behind me and they just started shoving me in my locker. They were going to lock me in my locker, but they were not happy with me. And then they were going to meet me after school, and I can't use the language they use, but I was going to hurt a lot when they were finished. Fortunately, I had a friend who was a ninth grader who came up behind him and was bigger than the two of them, and he quickly put an end to it. But
what did he say to him?
He said he would be there to meet with them, not me. And they didn't show up. And I didn't think they would, but that was the end of it. And so I did skip school a lot when I got into high school. I was on our school called an independent study. So if you kept a certain GPA, there were certain classes you didn't have to attend. You were supposed to go to the library and do other research, like for biology and things like that. But for example, I went to first lunch and biology was during second lunch. And a lot of my friends were in second lunch. And so when I was supposed to be in the library, I was often out with my friends at lunch. And then I literally got skipping school down to a science. There was a girl that rode to school with me every day. And so even when my mom wrote a legitimate note, like he was sick, I wouldn't use her note. I would make the other girl write it in her handwriting. So it always matched. But I did get caught one time. I wrote that I was not in school on Friday because of my uncle who died in Virginia. I had to be at his funeral. And I actually went fishing with some friends. And so
that is bad.
That's really bad, yeah. But I went to work on Saturday. And I came home during my lunch break. And my dad was, I think, sitting there watching a ball game. And he was very calm. He said, "So, which one of your uncles did you have to go to their funeral yesterday?" And I knew right away I was busted. And he said, "If you want to skip school, you probably shouldn't leave a note in your pocket saying, because what they do, they sign it and give it back to you." And so my mom had found it doing the laundry. And I was busted. And so he grounded for 2 weeks. And I do remember saying, because I guess I had a little bit of an attitude, I said, "What are you grounding me from? Going to church, going to school, or going to work?" Because that's really all I felt like I did. But my dad was very effective as a disciplinarian. But that's an occasion where I got my mom flowers, and she quickly forgave me. But like I said, we were kind of scared to get in a lot. We were very, very legalistic.
Tell me about the church you guys went to.
Independent Baptist church. The only Bible acceptable was the King James Version. And you just were at church all week. I mean, church was your life. You went to Sunday school. In fact, I was a bus captain when I was in high school. So I would go there about 7 o'clock in the morning, get on a bus, drive around the neighborhood, give kids candy to go to church. Now they'd arrest you for it, but we were doing it in churches back in those days. Then you had Sunday school. Then you had church. Then you went home for a few hours. Then you came back for choir practice. Then you had Sunday evening church and Wednesday night prayer meeting and Thursday night visitation where you would go out and visit the homes of people that visited church on Sunday. And so it just played a major role in your life. But here's the thing. When you grow up like that, all your friends are in the same situation. So you don't know that much difference. Where it really made a difference was as it related to any social life we might have. For example, we weren't allowed to dance, go to dances. In fact, when I was in the second grade, it's so funny, I still have a mental vision of this, of me sitting in the gym at Y.E. Smith Elementary School on the sideline, on the bench, because we were square dancing for P.E., and my parents wouldn't let me square dance. So I had to take a note saying I was not allowed to square dance. That's in the second grade.
I remember square dancing.
Yeah, and we weren't allowed to go to movies. My first movie, I think I was 22 or 23 years old. We weren't allowed to go to bowling alleys.
Did they ever watch movies at home, or you just weren't allowed to go to the movie theater?
Movie theater. We weren't allowed to go to bowling alleys because people drank beer and smoked cigarettes at bowling alleys back in those days. So it was this constant attempt to keep us away from anything. I often compare it to, like, if you study the Pharisees of the Bible. Originally, God gave 10 commandments, but the Jews took those commandments and expanded them to 613, I think, laws, 612, 613. And so where God said, "Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy," they took not working on the Sabbath, like, okay, well, we got to make sure we expand this a little bit. So, for example, if you walked across the grass on the Sabbath and you broke a blade of grass, you were guilty of working. So they added a law. You can't walk across the grass on
the
Sabbath.
Isn't that insane?
Oh, yeah.
I've been in John, and I read about the invalid. They were mad because Jesus told him to pick up your bed and walk, and he was carrying his bed, and they were bothered by it. It's like they had no compassion. It was like...
Or like the man who was born blind, and he said, "I don't know what's wrong with you guys. Just know the morning I couldn't see, and now I can." But yeah, they were all over him. They weren't happy that a guy was now able to see. They even called his parents in, but that's how legalists are. You couldn't wear sandals that were shod with nails because you were guilty of carrying nails. And so they were working. And so they came up with all of these different things. And I was thinking about that one day. My childhood was kind of like that. I called them fence laws. Like, for example, it'd be like, I know you used to be a nanny for your niece and nephew. It would be like you saying, okay, you can play in the front yard, but you cannot go in the street. But then you think, you know what? They could wander in the street one day. So I'm going to tell them they can't go in the front yard, because that way I know they won't go in the street. But then one day you see them looking out the window and you're like, wow, they're going to be tempted by looking out that window and seeing the front yard, which may lead them into the street. So they can't look out the window. And so you pull the drapes Well, now they open the drapes and look out, so you put them in a closet. The whole point was to try to get you as far away from the cliff as possible so there was no way you could ever do anything wrong. So, you know, you couldn't see a Disney movie because what if they showed a preview of another movie that maybe had a curse word in it or maybe something your parents didn't want you. So no movies altogether. You couldn't go to a bowling alley because maybe you've never been tempted to drink a beer or smoke your cigarette, but you're around people who are. That might be what tempts you. Anything we could to remove us from what potentially could happen, what happens is it gives you a false sense of a lot of things. One, you start to feel like I'm pretty good because I don't do any bad things.
Yes, completely.
I never smoked a cigarette. I never went to a party. I never tasted a beer all the way through college. And so you start thinking, I'm pretty spiritual. You become a Pharisee. Like, look at all these good things that I'm doing and all the bad things that I'm not doing. So it gives you a false sense of what your relationship with God is.
And then you even start looking down upon others because you can get prideful. And I can put myself in that boat because I was at some point in my life.
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, it sounds like maybe the church you grew up in was not as bad.
No, it wasn't as bad. I remember when we had a youth group and it wasn't like no music. I remember bowling. I don't know if it was a church outing, but I did go bowling.
You went bowling?
Oh, I did. Heathen, I know.
I can't believe I married you.
I know. But I do remember them preaching more about his wrath than his grace. And I think there needed to be a better balance because I'm wanting to obey because I'm so afraid that he's going to take out his whip and get me back into line. And so my behavior was changing because I was thinking that that was going to make me holy or righteous, but it's the inward transformation that he's after because your behavior will change when your heart is changed by God.
Yeah, you can have all the fence rules in the world. Like, for example, when we went to camp, they called it no mixed bathing, but it's really meant the guys and girls couldn't swim together because you might see a girl in a bathing suit, right, that would give you a lustful thought. As a family, we didn't go to the beach, even though we lived in North Carolina, because there were women in bathing suits at the beach. So don't go to the beach. Evil stuff happens. So it was a constant, instead of building you up and building your character through the power of Christ and the Holy Spirit. See, we didn't talk about, I don't think I ever heard the word discipleship growing up. It just was obedience, like don't do bad things. And if you did do bad things, you went forward on Sundays and the invitation and confessed it. And
you said you were always down at the front.
Oh, I go to the altar all the time. Because you know what you think when you do that? Like, oh man. I glanced over and took an answer off that kid's test. I must not be saved. So you go down again, like, in case I wasn't saved last week, because your whole Christian experience is about how obedient or not obedient. So you feel guilty all the time. You feel this pressure all the time. I never heard grace talked about in church. And so that, yeah. And then to top it off, when I graduated from high school, my parents allowed me to go to one university. I won't mention its name because it's still there. But it's one of the most, it's like took legalism to a whole nother level. Like it just, you could get a doctorate in legalism at the university. You couldn't talk to a girl after 6 o'clock at night. When you went to the library, there was a girl side of the library. There was a boy's side of the library. I know this sounds so funny. People must be thinking, what kind of cult, right? But again, it was the fence laws. Don't put you in a situation where you might hold a girl's hand or something like that. There are certain sidewalks. You couldn't walk with a girl on certain sidewalks.
Wow.
Yeah. So everything I learned was now just reinforced when I went to college. And that was my whole life, trying to be good. And if I was doing good, felt great. Felt superior. But if you had a little slip up, then you felt horrible and you wanted to get saved all over again. And then through a weird series of circumstances, I became a minister. I hadn't been to seminary and a guy who was kind of my mentor, when they asked me to be the pastor at 24, he said, I'll pay for you to go to seminary. So I went to seminary in Southern California, and I knew nothing about being a pastor. I was a pretty good teacher.
Weren't you a youth pastor
before that? I began as a youth pastor, and then the senior pastor had to resign because of some health reasons. And so they said, well, he wasn't ready to retire financially, so we want to commit to him, which I thought was honorable, but we really can't afford to replace him. We're already paying you. It wasn't a huge church at the time. And he says, so they said, we need you to teach on Sunday morning until we find a pastor. So I did that and the church started growing and they're like, okay, we just want you to be the senior teaching pastor. So I was actually a youth pastor and a senior pastor for about 2 years. I would teach high school, Sunday school, and then run in and teach the adults. And it was during that time I started going to seminary and there was a phenomenal man there, Dr. Neil Anderson. And he was over the pastoral study side of seminary. You have kind of the theological side where Hebrew and Greek and all those things. But then it's the practical ministry of counseling, dealing with families going through grief, all of those kinds of things. He was over. And he was just a very approachable guy. He wasn't like he was up on a pedestal. So I found me spending a lot of time when I would go to campus to take classes going by his office because I didn't know how to do a funeral. I got a wedding too. I've never done a wedding. And so he was walking me through all of these things.
So he mentored and discipled you?
Really just kind of began to pour into me. And I'll never forget, I was in his office and I was talking about a situation one day I had to handle at the church. And the way I was going about it, like superior and spiritual, and he said, you have no concept of what grace is, do you? And I just looked at him. And he said, yeah, you're missing out on the whole Christian life. So he did. He began, I wouldn't even say it was a formal mentoring, but we developed a friendship where he really poured more into me. I think my time with him outside of class was probably as effective and as important maybe as anything I learned. Don't get me wrong. I learned a lot of great things in school, but him helping me rethink grace, mercy. And I got to tell you, it was like shackles fell off. I understood what Paul said, just because you have grace, that doesn't give you more freedom to sin.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It gives you more freedom to love Christ and want to follow him. And I begin to see that shift. There's even been times I thought, did I not really become a Christian till then? But I couldn't even deal with that because I thought, I'm pastoring a church. I may not have been a Christian. Right. But he assured me, he said, Mike, you're a Christian. You just haven't been taught. But I remember thinking, wow, this is so foreign to anything that I had ever heard in my life. But it radically shaped, I think, the person that I eventually have become. Not that I'm perfect, obviously, by any stretch of the imagination, but more, I think, of my ministry with other people and my relationship with other people. If I can find positive in a situation.
100%. You will look for the positive.
I'm like, well, you know, maybe this. Maybe we don't know. And a few weeks ago when I was teaching through the Sermon on the Mount, and it says, do not judge. And the thing I kept stressing is when we judge someone, one, we don't know all the facts. We never know all the facts. We may think we know the facts, but we know all the facts. Plus, we don't know motive. We don't know what's really going on in their heart. We don't know anything. We think we do. And so we're just not in a position to do that. Plus, at the same time, we all have things in our lives that I'm sure other people are talking about us, saying, hey, did you notice how he acted, copped an attitude, said that? So you got your own stuff to work on. And I loved how Jesus put it. And when he talked about judging, it wasn't even necessarily like he was, I think his point was, that doesn't mean you throw discernment out the window. If you see something that's wrong, part of our job as a Christian is to address it. But yet, I think getting the plank out of our own forehead, going through that process, it humbles us and reminds us, yeah, I got a lot of growing to do too. Well, that will totally change your perspective of how you approach someone and help them remove a speck when you realize, I got my own issues. So I'm not coming to you because I'm judging you. I'm coming to you because I love you. And trust me, I've been where you are, and I'm still where you are sometimes. It just changes everything about us when we begin to understand that.
I think people that listen to you know that you're the least judgmental person. That's why they love hearing you teach, because you're a very humble person and you don't see how gifted and talented you are, which I love. And you definitely are a man of mercy and grace.
I think when...
And you have helped me, because I don't trust people. you gotta earn my trust.
Yeah, we've had this philosophy. I like just trust people, face value, and I get hurt a lot. It burnt.
You do, but like what you said.
But you say, hey, you got to earn that trust. And it's just the way we're wired, not right or wrong. We're just wired differently.
Even if someone does the same thing, you still try to find the good in them, which is good. But I just don't want you to get hurt or blindsided or crushed. But you have helped me, because you said, well, think about it this way. You don't know their motive. You don't know what's going on in their life. Maybe it was a rough time for them. And so you have helped me grow in that area, is trying to see past what they might have said or done that might have been extremely hurtful, and looked at the motive like they didn't really mean to crush me. That wasn't their intent.
I think it's interesting, and I've taught this before. If you look at the Apostle Paul, I think a lot of times we think he was like a battleship just steaming through these towns, cannons blowing you. I don't think we realize how full of grace that he was. Obviously a strong theologian, but if you look at some of the books that he wrote, you would see like in the earlier ones, I'm Paul, an apostle, right? And then I'm Paul, a servant. Then I'm Paul, the chief of sinners. The more mature he got, the more meek and humble he got. Because I think you realize, and Paul had a past too, I think sometimes you just realize, and I think we're all capable of doing things we never thought we would do. But when you actually cross the line and do it, you can't help but think, wow, there's just no way I can be judgmental of anybody. Because one of the things that hurt me so bad, and it probably shouldn't have, when I went through my mess was that because I'd always been a person of grace and mercy, I was the type of pastor, and you know the church was thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And when you got that many people, you got some stories. You could come to my office and tell me anything. You could tell me the worst dark story. But if I saw you on Sunday, I didn't see you through that lens. I just saw you as, hey, here's somebody that's broken, like all of us, and needs help. I guess I assumed that when I fell, I would be extended that same. And I understand teachers are held to a higher standard. I get that. And maybe it's my naivety, but it was devastating to me how hard Christians were. And I actually thought, this is probably a big reason that people stay away from church. I mean, I'm sure people look at Christians and say, wow, if they treat each other like that, there's no way I'm showing up with all my baggage.
Have you been on Facebook?
Oh, I know. Yeah.
We throw opinions, we throw our thoughts, and we don't really know the whole scope of things and the whole perspective and what the reality necessarily is. We don't have to always give our opinions. I think sometimes we think, oh, well, no, you know, I got to call this out or give my opinion. No, actually, God. No,
that's okay.
Wisdom is actually knowing when to speak and when not to speak.
Yeah.
And throwing stones and saying all these things, it's not helpful for the body of Christ. We actually should go in our prayer room and pray for that person.
Yeah.
Or pray for this situation, because we think, well, I'm just bringing things into the light. No, you're gossiping. You're having character assassination.
I didn't think about this until I was older, but I think when someone hurts you, you should never even have a conversation with them about it until you've forgiven them. Because forgiveness is on you. It's not them earning it. It's not them asking for it. It's you processing and deal with it. And because here's the thing. If you say, do something really bad to me, you spit in my food, then tell me later.
Really?
I'm just hypothetically. But if I'm angry and I confront you, I'm coming from a place of anger. I want that pound of flesh, right? But if I've processed it, see, a big difference is coming to you and say, hey, I just want you to know something. Yeah, you hurt me, but I've already forgiven you. Now I want to talk to you about how can we make sure this never happens again in our relationship. There's going to be a totally different way you receive that than me coming in there all red-faced and, you know, like, oh, here we go. And so there's just so much, if we could understand grace. I mean, Romans 5:8, while we were still sinners, not while we earned anything, while we were still mean and ugly and dirty and not even interested in being in a relationship with God, while we were yet sinners, Christ said, yeah, I'll still die for him. That's grace in action. God's riches at Christ's expense. Just studying Paul this week, I'm teaching through Philippians. It's funny how he says in Philippians chapter 1, he said, hey, other people are out there preaching, and they're preaching a gospel that, you know, some out of selfish motive. But you know what literally in the Greek, it says this, so what? That's Apostle Paul. So what? At least Christ is being preached. And it's interesting because if you go to Galatians chapter 1, verse 8, he said, if anyone preaches any other gospel to you than that you have received, even if it's an angel from heaven, and it's anathema. It's like, God just destroy you, right? And you say, well, wait a second. How can he say in Philippians, hey, if they're preaching the gospel, even if it's with wrong motives, so what? But then in Galatians, he says, let them be accursed, anathema. And what's the difference? Well, one is the gospel still going out in Philippians. It's the gospel. Yeah, you're doing it for something. Maybe you're doing it to make money. Whatever it is, the gospel's still going for. When you get to Galatians, the Greek, any other gospel, it literally in the Greek is a gospel of another kind. It's a totally different gospel. And what was going on in Galatia was the Christians had responded to the gospel, but there were still people with the Jewish influence who were saying, the gospel's good, you got to have the gospel, you got to have Jesus. However, you still have to obey all these rules. If you still want to be a Christian, you have to do these things. And so they were adding to the gospel. Yes, accept Jesus as your Savior, but you still have to obey all the rules if you want to be in a relationship with Jesus. And Paul said, that's not the gospel. That is a totally different gospel. That's legalism. And that's what was going on in the church at Galatia. It's deadly. Legalism's deadly. And looking back on it now.
Well, then it's almost like you're earning your salvation for by grace.
That's basically what they were saying. There's grace, but you still got to earn it. It's not by grace through faith. It's you still got to work to earn it. And anytime we add that to think that we position ourselves in a better place before God, it's another gospel. It's a gospel of a different kind. And Paul says that's bad. So yeah, legalism is a bad thing. It's a bad thing.
How did you eventually break free from it and really pursue a relationship with Jesus with so many years of being in that legalistic mindset?
I think two people, Dr. Anderson, played a huge part in that. Lenny Mullen, chairman of my first elder board, just one of the godliest men. And I just saw incredibly successful man, World War II bomber pilot, spent 2 years in the prisoner of war camp, humble, gentle with people. And I don't know, God just began to soften my heart. But I think a big part of it was you can look good on the outside, but you still know your heart, right? You may not do certain things, but that doesn't mean your heart, you don't want to do them and those kinds of things.
And God knows our thoughts.
I think I became a lot more honest about who I was and where I was. And even though I'd grown up in church my whole life, I realized that's a pretty shallow Christian because I understood salvation. But then I realized I had so much to learn. And I was so far behind most people. Or you've heard me say, even now.
You're like a week ahead,
a week ahead of most people and running like crazy to stay ahead of them because, like Paul said, we just haven't arrived. And I think if we can just remember that, and even when I'm dealing with other people, it's like, well, only by the grace of God, that could easily be me. And I'm grateful if it's not. But I think reminding ourselves that outside the grace of God, what we're capable of, we're just sinners who happen to be saved by grace. And
I think sometimes people think that, like you said, like you're not that bad because you're not doing all those things. So
I'm not doing anything as bad as they're doing.
So if someone's listening and maybe they didn't realize that they're very legalistic, what would you say to encourage them to overcome that? Maybe they're thinking, that kind of sounds like me. What can I do to have a relationship with Jesus?
Well, anytime you're judgmental, it comes from a place of pride or insecurity. Always. Either I think I'm better than you, or I'm not sure I'm better than you, so I need to tear you down. So at least I feel I'm as good as you. So partly is you got to find out why. And most of the time, it's people, they don't understand their identity in Christ. Literally, just before we started this podcast, I was studying. Jesus tells a story about the two builders, one being wise, one not so wise, one built on a strong foundation, one built on sand. And you know the story. If the storm comes, the one on the foundation stood, the one on the sand collapsed. When you get into Philippians, it's about joy and stability and strength. And it's like when Christ is at the center of your life, which I think is the same as having the strong foundation, you can be joyful in any situation. You can survive any situation. And if you can realize that's who your identity is in Christ, you don't need to put other people down. You don't need to judge other people. You'll begin to see yourself as God sees you. Like, God, how do you really see me? And if you're honest about that, it won't take you long to come to the conclusion, I'm really not in a position to be judging other people and putting them down. I don't know how you can ever go wrong extending grace and mercy to people.
We desperately need it.
And you may be disappointed sometimes, and it may not always work out the way you think. I mentioned Lenny Mullen, and I've told you the story before, and I won't go all through it, but he reached out to an individual who was desperation, just got out of prison, helped them get set up and all of these things. And for a year, it looked like the hugest success story until one day they ripped him off, him and his wife off, took off with the car they had bought her and all of these different things. And everybody said, well, I hope you learned your lesson. And I'll never forget his response was, well, what I learned is you treat people the way God tells you to treat people. It's up to him how they respond. He was unflappable. He was not like, yeah, I learned my lesson. I'm not doing that again. And his whole point was, you can't go wrong extending mercy and grace because you know in your heart you did. I mean, how many times does Jesus say, you want mercy? Show mercy.
And in the Garden of Eden, Satan wanted Eve to question, did God really say that? He didn't say to Eve, you're worthless, you're a nobody, there's no future for you. But did God really say that? Because that's who her identity was in. The enemy's always wanting us to question who we are, to confuse us. That's why some people travel the world because they got to find themselves. But no country, no city, no person is going to reveal to you who you are, but one person, and his name is Jesus Christ.
I love the Constitution, but one of the things that's really wrong with it, it talks about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that sounds so good. And we would fight for life and liberty. But the pursuit of happiness, I don't think you can pursue it. I think it's inside. There's nothing outside. There's nothing external. That at the end of the day, as much as I love you, you could break my heart. You could let me down. I could let you down. The middle verse of the Bible is, man will fail you, God will not. Just the middle verse of the Bible. And so I think we just have to be reminded that our focus has to be on Christ. And it's that when he's the center of our lives, we'll have a joy regardless of our circumstances, because at the end of the day, we know he's in charge. Philippians 1:6, he who began a good work in you, I'm confident in the fact, Paul said, he's going to complete it. Well, if that's true, and the storm and the sickness and the financial reversal is all part of the journey, I'm not happy about it, but I can find joy knowing, okay, God's at work. That doesn't mean I have to like it, but I can find joy in the confidence that God's working in my life. And that's the foundation that I want my life to be on.
Trust me, sometimes you are not going to be happy with what God puts us through, because he's after our hearts.
Like cold plunges.
Yeah. I was talking to my mom today. I was just thinking about all the things that people will have no idea that I went through in my life, because I've had a lot of people say, I wish I had your life. And I just want to say, you have no idea. You have a snapshot, but you don't have the whole scope of what my life has been like the past few decades. And they'll get a glimpse of it when my book gets released. But I was just telling her, the things that I thought I wanted, I don't really care about anymore unless it's his will. He stripped me of my desires, the things I wanted. And even in the wilderness, I learned so much about him. And it's like, I truly want whatever he wants. If he doesn't want me to be an author, that's fine. I want others to come to know him the way I do. It's not about me being an author anymore. When I was younger, when I was 18, I wanted my name on a book. I thought that would just be so cool. But now I want them to see that he is faithful, and having a relationship with him is worth more than anything they could ever want, possess, dream, anything. He surpasses everything, because there is truly no one like him.
Well, I can't wait till you finish it.
It's a long process. So if someone's listening, and maybe they don't have a mentor or someone to disciple them, what kind of practical steps could they take to get that relationship? What can they do?
With God, you mean?
Yes, not with you, hopefully.
You got to spend time with him. I've always known that, but after I went through what I went through, I could see where the cracks really began to show. Even studying for sermons every week took the place of just being in the presence of God, sometimes quiet, sometimes still. I taught that one time about how in the Old Testament, I think it's Ezekiel, that when they went into worship, they would, if they walked in from the west side of the temple, had to go out the east side. If they walked in the east side, they had to go out the west side. Like, why would they have to do that? And the whole point was, after you've been in the presence of God, you'll leave a different way.
Amen.
You're going to leave differently than when you came in. Even the wise men, it says, after they'd been in the presence of Jesus, by the way, Jesus was two by the time the wise men showed up. So that's going to ruin everybody's nativity scene. But it said they went home a different way. And I don't think that's just a play on words. I think they came there looking for who knows what, but after being in the presence, they went home differently. I think, without a doubt, find some kind of way, even if it's only 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day. And I'm so proud of you. I can always tell when you're up in the morning because the light's on under the bedroom door. And I know what you're doing. You're in there reading your Bible. And you don't need me to be proud of you, but it makes my heart warm every time I see
that. I like you being proud
of
me.
And so you got to figure out a way. I mean, shoot, go to the Be Renewed app. I do a daily digging deeper where it's just a 5 or 10 minute devotional every day where there's a verse, there's a thought, there's some questions to ask yourself, maybe something to pray through. But get in the habit of doing something that draws you into the presence of God every day, but not just for you to ask and talk, but to listen. And I promise you, if you listen, his spirit will begin to communicate with your spirit. He'll begin to point out areas of your life where you need to trust him. You need to grow. You need to change. You need to bring in alignment with his word. Your life will begin to change, and you'll find your confidence in that, not all the business. Because once you get out of the door in the morning, it's chaos.
Chaos.
So somewhere, even Jesus, there were times he's like, I just got to get along with the Father. If Jesus needed to carve out time to be with the Father, good gracious, we need to. I think the one thing that you can do that's more, accountability is great, but you know what? One thing I learned about accountability, if you don't want to be honest with someone, accountability, that doesn't matter. But when it's just you and God, you're not going to pull the wool over his eyes. He sees you as you are, and he loves you as you are. But he wants you to experience the full joy of being the person he created you to be.
What book would you encourage them to start reading first?
I would say the Gospel of John.
That's what I meant. I love the book of John.
The Bible's the most read book in the world, and the Gospel of John is the most read book in the Bible. It just is a strong portrayal of the gospel. You got Matthew, Mark, and Luke. They're known as the synoptic gospels because they're pretty similar, but John gives us a whole different perspective. He doesn't even begin until Jesus is going public with his ministry. And it really doesn't cover that long. When you get to chapter 13 of John, the last half of the book is just a few days. So you get a glimpse of the Savior.
And I would encourage people to look for him when you're reading the Bible. Sometimes I was just trying to remember all the facts, but when you look for him, you'll get to see who he is as a person. And that's what's truly life-changing. He's merciful. He's gracious. He's kind. He's long-suffering. He's compassionate. He's slow to anger, abounding in love. So when people read the Bible, they really need to look for Jesus. I don't care what book of the Bible you're in, look for him.
Yeah, you'll find him. And I'll say one last thing, and I get no money for this. Watch The Chosen. If you want to get a different perspective of what Jesus was really, they have done a phenomenal job of portraying Jesus and his heart, the heart of Jesus, the kindness of Jesus, just the gracefulness of Jesus. Yeah, the only people he's really tough with were the religious leaders.
I know my dad was shocked when he saw the money changers.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, I don't see him doing that.
That's angry Jesus.
Yeah. Well, you have to remember, he died on the cross for sin. He hates sin. He's a just God.
Even as I've watched it, it's given me a new appreciation for the character of Jesus, his character traits. They just come out in his day-to-day walk and the way he interacted with people. And you can't help but watch it and think, I want to be like him. That's who I want to be like.
Thank you so much for sharing part of your story with me. There's so many layers to you. I can't wait to interview about the one that you went to Colombia, the prison.
Colombia, Central African Republic, Haiti.
So many. People have no idea.
Guns pointing at me in the middle of the jungle.
Well, don't give away too much. You're going to come back.
But I'm still here.
By God's amazing grace.
By God's grace. Yep.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Remember, when life feels out of focus,
get in focus.
Do you know the ending?
Remind me.
There's always one who brings clarity. We'll see you next time.
She crushed it.